No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's episode of Friday Morning GM with my friend and co-host, Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Great to be with you, as always, Ken. I want to wish everybody in Ravens flock a happy holidays. Very much encouraged by the defensive performance against Cincinnati. Got back to that bully mentality, that opportunistic defense, hitting the quarterback, scoring a touchdown, two picks. Lamar looks like he's healthier. I think if the Ravens can find a way to improve their blocking from the offensive line one way or another, obviously they got to get in the playoffs first, but I think this still could be their year.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the question, certainly. They don't have as good a chance of making the playoffs as they did before that Monday night comeback by the Steelers. Comeback, the decimation of the Dolphins by the Steelers. But we did want to talk playoff scenarios a little bit up front here because there's some weird things going on with this AFC North race. The first thing is that the Ravens, of course, got – I don't know what word you want to use semantically. I used the word flexed, and somebody got upset with me online about having the game flexed on a Saturday. And then they talk, wait a minute, that was always a TBD game. And so, it's silly. I mean, it's just semantics is what it is. So They're basically the NFL with full understanding of what this did to the playoff picture in the AFC North, the AFC North race and elsewhere decided it would be a good idea to have the Ravens play Saturday, the Steelers play Sunday. And then the Steelers have the advantage of being able to rest players if the Ravens, don't put them in a position of needing a win or wanting a win, either one. Mm-hmm. I think at this point it can only be wanting a win, right? Because the only way the Steelers can lose is if they lose the finale and other things to the Ravens. So I think it's only wanting a win. But they could potentially, seal up the division then, and basically all the information will be out there for the Steelers to make that decision before they play on Sunday.
If the Ravens are two games back, then week 18 doesn't matter.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
But otherwise, if the Ravens are one game back or it's tied, then obviously it doesn't matter.
So they're a game back now, and they and if both win or both lose this week, then they'll still be a game back. But the Ravens could either be two back or one and a half back or a half back, and either at a half back, the Steelers can rest everybody. At one and a half back, they may decide We want to play for the win here, not have a winner take all game against the Ravens, which would make, I think, a lot of sense. Sure. Playing against Cleveland. So it's the weirdest thing, though, the fact that the week 17 game might not matter at all if both teams are 8-7, or even both teams are potentially could be 7-8. Both teams could be 8-8 or 9-7. It could be either one of those.
Okay. Right. And I think it's certainly unique, but if the Ravens are within one game going into 18 and they beat the Steelers and they won the division. So that's where the tricky part comes in, or not the tricky part, but the interesting nuance of it all.
So two things about this. First of all, from the Ravens' point of view, if week 17 does not matter, which is about a 43% chance given the relative money lines in the two games this week, what basically has to happen is Detroit has to beat Pittsburgh and the Ravens have to beat New England. Both the appropriate teams from the Ravens' perspective are favored in those games.
Right.
And so it's about a 43% chance both of those things occur. If it does happen, would you want the Ravens to rest Lamar, rest several other players who've been working with nagging injuries, or do you play all out on a Saturday night game against Green Bay that doesn't mean anything?
1,000% I would be in favor of resting Lamar and Ronnie Stanley and probably Marlon and maybe even Roquan. Definitely, you rest your guys that have, like you said, been dealing with nagging injuries. They have more time to recuperate and rest. If it's a meaningless game, it's essentially a late bye in a way. And you wouldn't even have the issue of going into the playoffs cold because you'd still have the Week 18 game to rev your engine back up again. So I would 100% be in favor of that.
Yeah, me too. And it's every time the Ravens had an option to sit in Week 18, they've done it. Right. Every time they've had the option to do it in the Lamar era, they've sat Lamar Jackson in 2019, and that was before they had a bye week starting the playoffs. It was 2 weeks off for Lamar.
Yeah,
there were people who complained about that, but they haven't taken risks with their players, and I think it's appropriate. I think they'll do it again. Now, here's the really fun thing: if this scenario plays out as is required to this week, it would mean the Steelers drop to 8-7 on the season. If they were then to say, okay, well, the Ravens are week 16, both teams are after week 15, both teams are at 8-7, then neither team can win it in week 17. And the only game that matters is the week 18 game, as we said.
Yep.
However, the Steelers, if they lost two consecutive games and they could basically cede one to the Browns, if they decided they didn't want to play Aaron Rodgers, who's their big decision in this case, if they decided they didn't want to do that, then Tomlin's never had a losing season streak will be a one game winner take all situation in week 18.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, that's been his calling card for the last 6 or 8 years because he hasn't won any playoff games. So never had a losing season. You know, not that it matters in any real way, except in their bad seasons, they have a lower draft pick. So, yeah.
I think the Steelers would be well advised to pitch the streak almost intentionally if the game does not matter. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're going to have to play that. You're going to have to beat the Ravens no matter what. You rest every key player you can. You know, T.J. Watt may be out anyway because he's got the lung issue. You got Rodgers, who's playing with a broken arm. You don't want that to get worse. And I'm not sure how it can, but, you know, it get painful anyway. You got other players on that defense who've been
Hayward
banged up. Hayward, yeah.
He's old. At his age, he could definitely use a week off. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think that Tomlin would be well advised to just basically say, hey, look, that streak means nothing to me. If it gives us a 2% better chance to beat the Ravens, then we do it. And that's how the Ravens ought to approach it. If the chance is even 1% more to beat the Steelers, you rest whoever you need to rest. And I think it probably very clearly is. And I think isn't there something about Lamar not having beaten the Packers yet? Is that part of it? Or maybe he's never played at Lambeau, one or the other.
Has he played the Packers at all? They, so, you know, that's the every 8 years, right?
2021, I don't think he played them. And 17, he wasn't in the league yet. So I think this is his first chance to beat the Packers, which that is a checklist item. It's like, I hate to say this. Maureen and I are what are known as goal-oriented travelers, which means there's a lot of checkboxing on doing things. So you want to go to every continent. You want to go to as many countries as possible. That's what this is. I mean, that's for Lamar. That's exactly what this is. And it's just a box to check. And if he sits out the game and misses, I don't think it's a big deal.
Now, to me, you want to obviously put your best foot forward going into week 18, not only resting guys that could benefit from rest, but avoiding injuries that could occur in that game. So to me, it's a no-brainer.
With you all the way. All right. We had news on an old friend in this last week, Matt Judon, released by Miami. I guess they were hoping somebody might pick up his contract. That was not going to happen ever, but he went unclaimed, so now he's free to sign anywhere. First of all, do you think there's a team out there who wants Matt Judon on their 53 at this point?
He hasn't had a good year. I don't think he had a particularly good year last year, but I think he still does offer something in the run defense department as far as edge setting. And he was also playing on special teams in Miami. He's a personal favorite of mine. He's one of the favorite defenders from the early portion of the Lamar era, along with Marlon. I wish they didn't bring him back. Obviously, he went on to have a good time, good years with the Patriots. So I could see him fitting in Baltimore as an upgrade over David Ojabo, particularly as a two-down or early-down run edge setter, as well as a special teams contributor. You're muted, Ken.
I wouldn't have a problem with a practice squad signing. And I don't know why anybody would ever have a problem with a practice squad signing, other than the Ravens have to get rid of somebody else, some other vet from their practice squad in order to sign it. So there is that.
Actually, they do just have a spot open up in the practice squad with the Tennessee Titans poaching Sanusi Kane. No, so they would have a spot there.
And they would also squad, but they don't have a vet spot.
Ah, yes. Well,
so they'd have to get rid of a vet off their practice squad to get him. Remember, they had to get rid of Carl Lawson just last week to basically make room for another vet.
Yes, that's a good point. I forgot about the vet issue there. They're going to have a 53 spot here soon if Buchanan goes to IR as well. So they're not necessarily tight on spots. And Cooper Rush has been kind of just eating up a roster spot for the last half a season or whatever, too. Not a tight roster crunch at this point. But just back to Judon, I do think he could be an upgrade over Ojabo. If it was a one-for-one that you release Ojabo, you bring in Judon, I personally be in favor of that. He can still be an edge setter. He was starting for Miami, and Miami won, five of the last six games. So he's not, he's not a pass rusher. Fortunately, the Ravens have plenty of designated pass rusher options already. So if you put Tavius on one side, Judon on the other on first down, and save a little bit of wear and tear off of Kyle Van Noy and Mike Green, maybe you get a little boost in their pass rush production on later downs.
All right. He has played 337 snaps this year. So that's something. And he dropped the cover 37 times this year and last year. Matt Judon has not been the Matt Judon Ravens fans remember as a coverage player. When he and Bowser were together, they were arguably the two best coverage outside linebackers in the entire game, offered tremendous flexibility to Martindale and some of Pease to move those guys around and have them be part of drops and some blitzes and whatnot. That's not the case anymore. He can't do it anymore, and he's 33 and change. But I agree with you on the run defense. There's probably players who are worse. He hasn't scored well on PFF in that category, but PFF has some
better than Ojabo.
Yeah.
I did look it up. He'd basically be like a Courtney Upshaw. You know, you bring him in, he gives you a couple snaps here and there, just as a run defender.
All right. Fair enough. Sanusi Kane poached off the practice squad by Tennessee, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about that loss? Bothered by it?
Not in the slightest. You know, I think he was overbilled as a safety three in training camp. I don't think he ever necessarily had the range to be a back end safety. I didn't care for the pick at the time because strong safety types are just very available. He was a second year player who made the 53, then was beaten out by undrafted rookie Keandre Jackson, essentially, who has more team control as a rookie. And he basically, I think it happened 2 weeks after, where they were both on the 53, But Jackson has more team control, and he's a better special teamer. Jackson actually makes plays on special teams.
Yeah, Jackson has had an unbelievable year on special teams this year, so that's certainly worth mentioning. But he was also beaten out by Lowry. Reuben Lowry beat him out early in the season. He got the first playing time when I guess Hamilton was down, right, for the Kansas City game? Or
that was the Houston game when they had everybody was out that one game. Yep. Yeah.
So if Kane's not beating those guys out for back end roles when they're talking him up in camp, he made some plays in camp. He also got beat some in camp. I have a very hard time, frankly, judging that as being significant. Even in the preseason, I don't think we saw enough to know. So anyway,
the overarching point to me is, why are we spending draft picks, even if they're late rounders? I'd rather spend them on a skill set that's a little bit more hard to find than a strong safety, because you found Keandre Jackson and Bo Braid and many, many guys UDFA.
So, okay, I'll take the other side of that. Okay. And that is that Ozzie Newsome in his career as a general manager had probably more value than almost any other position found at safety from round 6 and 7 and UDFAs. It's just unbelievable value, unbelievably consistently. Even Dwan Landry, they brought him in as a rookie fifth round starter. That's remarkable. And then, Chuck Clark was a 6 and Chad Williams was a 6. Haruki Nakamura was a 6. I mean, they got Anthony Levine was a UDFA. He was actually a free agent from Philadelphia, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He played at more near service time. Yeah, Landry, one of the great Ravens. That pitch play reminded me of that touch. Because Reed wasn't chucking that one. That was more of the handoff type, like the baton toss, like we saw this week.
Yeah. Somebody had there out on Twitter that was the only two times. I think it was the NFL put up something saying that was the only two times it had ever happened. The quote was like something like, if you had a nickel for every time that play happened, you'd have two nickels. And I couldn't decide if they're talking about the Ravens, the entire NFL, but the only other play they had was this Ed Reed one. It's not even correct. 11-5 of 06, the Ravens played the Bengals in a very important football game. They ended up winning it 31-13. People may remember it. They may not. Maybe I had a wrong year. But anyway, the Ravens won this football game. Mm-hmm. Samari Roll had a pick. He handed it off to Ed Reed for a lateral for a touchdown. It's happened at least that additional time. I'd actually be surprised if there were not more.
Ed Reed, I don't know if Ed Reed certainly pitched it quite a few times. I don't know how many went for touchdowns. He did have one in college when he kept the Miami Hurricanes, where he ripped the ball away and they beat Boston College. Ed Reed ran it back for a touchdown when he was in college.
He ripped the ball away from another
from his own player.
Yeah.
And then took it all the way for the touchdown, and they barely won. They squeaked by and maintained an undefeated season that year. Well, I think it was his last year of college. Yeah. Great player, Ed Reed. And how funny that the week that he came to visit the team, my all-time favorite Raven personally.
Yeah, obviously one of mine too as well, so that's great. We did get a question on that, by the way, but I'll maybe just highlight that later. Ravens right now are thin at inside linebacker. That's the position where they probably need to find another body. Higgins is back practicing this week. He's been limited, so I do not expect that he'll be able to go this week. But what do the Ravens do to have another guy ready to go? Because Hummel right now is their only backup, I think, right?
Carl Jones. They grabbed Carl Jones, a special teamer. He's light, though. I don't know if he's not really a defensive player, and he didn't necessarily fare too well in special teams from what I saw. To me, I think it's Simpson's time to shine. Third-round pick. He's graded well. He hasn't had much opportunity, but he has graded well. You're next to Roquan, right? So that's part of the reason why Roquan's worth his deal, is because he can elevate the play of the guy next to him. And he's more athletic than Buchanan. His instincts aren't quite there. The processing maybe is not quite Buchanan. But out of all the positions on the whole team, you say, where can you afford an injury? I think Will was probably close to the top of the list. So I'd like to see, maybe they can get some more production and some impact plays out of Simpson this last stretch here.
So they went to dime early from a down and distance standpoint this last weekend against the Bengals. They went with Hamilton on some 2nd and 7, 2nd and 8 kind of plays where they would not, and it was neutral game script early on in the first half kind of thing. It wasn't, a play you'd automatically go to them, but they clearly are hedging or cheating towards more dime and less Simpson. when they can do it. I guess I'm concerned they don't have a backup just as much. I guess Jake Hummel would come in and do the best he could.
Well, I think Hummel's can be a decent, you know, two down guy, right? They have him on the goal line package, so they believe they see something they like about his run defense. And Hamilton has been practicing with the linebackers in positional drills, you know, since he came down. I don't know about every week, but we've seen reports of that happening a few times. So I love Dime. So the more Dime, the better, and the more athletic, you know, guys like Simpson who can get downhill fast and, you know, sack the quarterback or on a blitz. I don't knock on wood because I think Buchanan's had a pretty solid rookie year for where he was drafted, but this could be addition by subtraction in the best case scenario.
Okay. I mean, he's had a Patrick Queen at the same point. That's what I can say possibly about him. I don't think he's had a particularly great season. And I was very surprised, frankly, by the Defensive Rookie of the Month award that he won. But
I've been hoping for more snaps from Simpson. So that's where I'm coming from, is a potential positive.
All right, fair enough. And I do love Hamilton as a Dime, but I like Hamilton as a slot corner even more. Mm-hmm. And you're taking out one of your really good tacklers out of the box. You're moving him and basically putting out Ardarius Washington at slot corner when he plays Dime. So mm-hmm. it is, if you better not be facing a running team this week. And the Ravens have some things going on because they don't exactly have their fifth defensive lineman figured out. It doesn't seem to be Peebles, and we had John Jenkins had an illness day.
Well, and cornerback's now becoming a question mark as well. We'll get to the injury report pretty soon here. Mm-hmm. But, just to put a bow on it, this will be – they're going to have to kind of put some pieces together, and Zach Gore's going to hopefully continue that great game plan he put together against Cincinnati down the stretch.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say now that – and you need to take each additional data point as it comes in, but it's fair to say now that I think that Orr has been a very good adjuster. A little bit of a problem, and Brandon Croxton came up with this, that he hadn't been, he'd been very poor on the first drive of the game. And they kind of were looking like they were headed in that way again. And then, you know, Cincinnati basically gave him a huge assignment error for the 15-yard sack.
Yeah, that was a great play by Tavius. Welcome back, Tavius. We missed you.
How about, let's talk about those guys coming back right now.
Yeah, sure.
And how significant those additions are. I guess we start with Tavius. I mean, the team has been so desperate for additional two down play at outside linebacker. They've been going to Ajabo for a fair amount of this, and he's not a solution. And then they've been splitting up the rest of the snaps among other players who probably are best suited as situational pass rushers.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you want to talk about the outside linebacker rotation, I was in favor of giving Kyle Van Noy more early down work because he has fallen off a little, certainly fallen off from a statistical perspective as a pass rusher this year. Ajabo, I just don't see how he really benefits the team being on the field at all. So Tavius being back was great, and now you have two of those kind of glass eater kind of guys with T and Draymond Jones, and they can both kick inside, and it gives you all types of versatility, and it gives you some of that edge. What was it, the Tennessee game where they had 12 sacks in 08 or 18, I think?
11 and
Jadarius and Judon, and you had just like a several of those just big body jumbo power edges just feasting. So, yeah.
That was
last shot, huh? Interesting.
It was one of the years that they actually went with race car first. They didn't do it all that much, and then the next year they played more race car than they did base defense. So defense was 10.2% of the time, or 10.3%, and the race car was like 13% and change, which is remarkable.
Blowing everybody out. They were blowing everybody out the whole season.
We had some other interesting things happening. Let's talk Ardarius Washington. We didn't really talk about him. I thought he played quite well. Nice downhill play to stop the tight end, I think it was, for a gain of 7.
Jasicki?
Yeah.
No, the other one. Croft? Yeah, that's it.
Hudson. Took him down for a gain of 7 when they needed 9. I mean, it's a defensive win, and, you know, you're playing sticks football. You don't always get a stop for 2+0 kind of thing, but this is a good play, and that's exactly what he's supposed to do. Tackling is the biggest concern for him, and it also exposes probably what is the biggest weakness. You bring in kind of a not so great tackler in Hamilton playing slot corner, could really hurt your run defense, I'd be afraid, against a team like New England. But as a generalized defender on passing downs, boy, do I love what Ardarius Washington did for the Ravens.
Absolutely. Very versatile. He's a great glue guy, homegrown guy. Definitely rooting for Ardarius. But we have a question on later in the mailbag. Give some more thoughts there.
Okay. All right. We'll go to that. Let's see. We want to talk about Carson Vinson's debut. Now,
yeah,
there's not a lot of data to go with here. I mean, the guy played 6 snaps if you look in the game book, but 3 of those were kneels. So those don't count. He doesn't have any reassignment on those. So the very first snap he played in the NFL, go back and take a look at it if you would. It's at the end of quarter 3. Ravens hardly had the ball in quarter 4. They only had it for 5 snaps. Right. But in quarter 3, the last snap, he had to replace Ronnie. And he came in, he blocks a side 3 separate times on what ended up being an S-5 where the spy had to eventually come in and get Lamar after he broke the pocket. But despite the fact he broke the pocket left and moved back to the right after that, he blocked a side 3 straight times. Looked fantastic on that play.
I'm bullish on Vinson. I thought Emory Jones had one good rep, you know, these small sample sizes. But I'm bullish on the young lineman. So we'll see how that plays out next year. But yeah, Vinson, that's the kind of guy you like to get in the mid to late rounds with the developmental upside to be something unique and, you know, valuable. So yeah.
Yeah, potentially remarkable value at that round. And because he's left tackle or bust. I mean, he won't play anywhere else on the field. And that's, in some ways, that's really nice. It's a freeing kind of a thing that you have a player who they're not going to screw around with his development and play him at a position where he shouldn't be, like guard or something, or even right tackle. I guess he could play there in an emergency if something happened to Rosengarten, but it certainly wouldn't be the choice.
Yeah, I agree. Unless you're going to become a left-handed run team, he's going to be a better pass blocker than run blocker. But he does have some physicality. Overall, it was just a good game of seeing, you know, Roquan carrying Jasicki down the seam on the breakup on the fourth down. That's probably the best pass defense play I've seen Roquan make in a couple of years. So, you know, you saw a lot of good development in this game. Now, they got to keep it up. You know, Cincinnati was on their last leg, but you went on the road in a cold environment and got it done. So nothing to complain. All good things there.
I got to call you out a little bit on this because I know you've been down on Roquan in general, and I don't have a problem with your valuation by position component to not wanting to pay the money and that kind of things. But Roquan's, if you really are saying – you got to do it again as if Roquan has not been a great coverage player this year. I mean, Roquan's coverage value is tremendously undervalued, tremendously underappreciated in this league.
He's
one of the very best. If you look at PFF, he's one of the very best, but I mean, just he's the more significantly that is the context of it is that the Ravens ask him to cover all the time because nobody else can do it among their linebackers.
So that's what I want to see out of Roquan, covering tight ends. He covers backs coming out of the backfield well, and that's probably where he gets a lot of the grading benefit. Mm-hmm. That to me is not a unique skill set. When you pay a guy $20 million a year, you want him to be able to cover tight ends like Fred Warner does. And that's why I was encouraged to see, because a lot of times the assignment is not necessarily he's dropping in zone or something like that. I mean, he was playing trail technique. He had to catch up to Jasicki. Jasicki ran a 4.4 or something. And I was just really impressed by that. So I wanted to give him a tat tip.
And the other one was the earlier play. He was in the window on Burrow's throw to Chase, right? It was Chase that got tipped for the interception by Humphrey. Mm-hmm. So that play was, you know, called out on TV by the announcer, but I don't even know. Was Aikman was doing the game? I don't remember who it was, but you know, somebody who knows something.
No, it was Spiridides, and I forget the other guy.
Spiridides is the play announcer guy. Yeah.
The only reason I remember that is because he's Greek.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I've been very positive on Roquan's, you know, play in general this year, but his coverage play has been terrific. All right. What else we want to talk about here? Let's go into the injury report.
Absolutely. So most concerning news from the early practice reports as we record on Thursday evening, Chidobe Awuzie has not practiced either Wednesday or Thursday with a foot injury. The other player that did not practice either day was Teddy Buchanan, who I expect will be put on IR on Saturday with a corresponding roster move. Rashad Bateman back to full with an ankle. Zay Flowers full with a neck. Jay Higgins has been his practice window for, to come off IR, so he's been limited 2 days with the knee. Keandre Jackson full after limited with an ankle.
And so going back for a second to Higgins, he has to come off of his three-week window in advance of the playoff game. Now the wild card game, if the Ravens are doing it, that's the end of his window. But he could come off earlier if the Ravens wanted him to. Just right. I don't think limited is showing us anything but the standard 3 week track. It would be my take on that.
Too early to tell. I'd say he could get a full in tomorrow and play this week. You know, we'll see. But yeah, usually it's what was to, for Ardarius had a limited full, I think. As soon as they go full, they usually play. Or did Ardarius have one full? So, and Tavius was limited full, I believe. Anyway, neither here nor there. Continuing down this list here, Lamar Jackson missed Wednesday with an illness. He was back on Thursday. John Jenkins did not practice on Thursday with an illness. Tyler Linderbaum was limited with a knee. Ronnie Stanley was limited with a knee and ankle. Kyle Van Noy was limited with a quad. CJ Okoye and Roquan Smith both went full after being banged up earlier in the week.
Okay. All right. So as about as good as you could hope in terms of the injury report, frankly, this time of year. And incredibly, the Ravens seem to be getting healthier and not worse in a lot of ways. Getting two players like Washington and Robinson back is just an enormous supplement to depth on this team.
Absolutely. And I think I'd also make the point that a lot of these players, and we'll see with Awuzie, because that could be a significant loss if he's not able to play, and that could rejigger the whole, you know, Marlon has then outside, and then is Keon Martin and Ardarius splitting slot snaps. So then, Hamilton is more of a dimebacker. We'll see how that works. But a lot of these players, they exited the game. We weren't sure if they were going to be able to come back, and they play the next week. We saw that with Wiggins. We saw that with Marlon. We saw that with Ronnie a couple times, and Keaton Mitchell's the other one. So, you know, the players are hungry. They realize the season's on the line, and they're putting their best foot forward.
Hey, you know, if you're – I think people are going to have a hard time manufacturing an argument as to why Harbaugh scuttled this team if they come back and make the playoffs. I think it's really, really going to be difficult to manufacture that argument. You point the guard, you try, and yet I don't, you know, there's so many bad guards in this league. It's really hard to point to Falele and say.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over, paid for by NHTSA.
There's street guys better than him, which is basically what you're saying at the replacement level.
I think you'd point to the first quarter of the season where they were mostly healthy and they lost. They dropped the Buffalo game. They should have won. They put up a bad effort against the Lions at home when they were still healthy. And then the Chiefs got them again. And then at some point you'd say, the whole point of contending every season is you're there every year and eventually you get over the hump. That's the theory. Is this guy going to be able to get us over the hump? That would be the way to frame it.
But or the other part of that is this the guy who's going to keep us in the race every year? And that's where he's got the sterling record that the Ravens have played. This is the key point. This is, I put this out in a video short today, is the Ravens in the last, since 2017, have played zero football games, zero, where they have not been in contention for the Super Bowl. That means they have not been eliminated prior to week 18 in any year.
It's just how much of that credit goes to the front office for putting a talented team on the field versus how much goes to coaching.
Isn't there a healthy lot of icing for all parties involved? Isn't there a healthy amount? Can you admit that? That's what I want to hear from you. It's one of these things that there is a lot of credit to go around for a record like that. I mean, it's like the Orioles winning 18 consecutive winning seasons. There aren't too many people. I can tell you what I think is the biggest single reason, but there aren't too many people who could really lay out the top five reasons in order.
I think Harbaugh is good at elevating. You know, we've seen him win games with Ryan Mallett and some. Mm-hmm. That's when he's at his best. When it's Tyler Hunt against the Bears and you want to take a undermanned team and elevate them to secure a victory, I think that's his greatest strength.
Okay.
So I'll give him credit for that. Yep.
All right. We don't have to go into this any deeper on this. Now, one thing the Ravens are going to have to decide this week is how they deal with their defensive line. They're playing the New England Patriots. The Patriots run the football very effectively. They have a two-headed monster in the backfield with Henderson and Stevenson that have been good, in addition to a lot of weapons otherwise offensively. Is this a week they go with four nose tackles again? In particular, because I'm not sure how they would even use Peebles if he was active.
Yeah, it seems that Peebles is kind of going to be on the shelf and try to put on some functional strength, I suppose, in the offseason. Do you need four? Now that you have Tavius and Draymond, they can both kick inside. You may be able to get away with four. Now, New England is a run-heavy team, but their offensive line's banged up. They're pretty weak, especially without Will Campbell. So I'm not sure if they need to boot, but if they have the extra roster spot due to Teddy Buchanan, maybe it makes sense to put him on the 53. So what do you take? What is your take on the fourth nose tackle?
So I would go with four nose tackles. No, every day and twice on Sunday, but it only has to be once on Sunday, as it turns out, but I would do it for sure. I don't think you take any chance of losing a guy in game and having that torpedo your chance in one of those critical games in a very long time. I mean, it's the most critical game of the season so far, other than, you know, the Pittsburgh game that I don't even want to think about anymore in terms of its significance and the way it was lost.
Yeah. Well, that was a tough one. So that makes sense from that perspective. If Jenkins gets nicked up or something, you have another guy there. Haven't been getting a whole lot out of Brent Urban lately. You know, with his age, you expect him to kind of wear down the season. That's probably a position or a roster spot I'd like to see upgraded in the offseason, not looking too far ahead.
You're upgrading it in the offseason. I'm fine with that. I'm also fine if Brent says he wants to play another year under the same deal. He comes in,
starts on the practice squad, yeah.
Doesn't take a roster spot. But basically, you get a free reserve player that you effectively have on speed dial to bring in whenever you need him. I mean, that was a marvelous deal they had with Urban this year.
Yeah, the last 2 years, right? So what do you make of Okoye's progression lately?
Yeah, so somebody did ask a question about Okoye, and I appreciate it coming on. That was on the YouTube channel. So I'll try and answer it here if I can. You know, there's been some pluses in terms of Okoye. I'd say he had more of a trial by need, a trial by fire, you know, born of need, which is usually what a trial by fire is. But recently he's probably been used in a more constrained first and second down role. He's never out there on third down, and that shouldn't really surprise anybody. If he was, it would be because it was third and one, and they have four defensive linemen out there, which is fine also. But they've used him in a very specific way, and I think he's been pretty good at it.
Yeah, usually when their offense is backed up and he gives Travis Jones a blow on the first half of the drive, and then Jones can come in. Yeah. That's kind of how it is. But, I mean, who would be a better player than Tupu as far as the 48 activations? I can't necessarily say, so I don't have a problem with going with four.
All right. They went zero elevations last week, so they saved him. And if you use Tupo, you might have to figure out how to activate him. I forget if he's had two elevations now.
This will be his third.
Okay, so that could play into it.
Buchanan. You have the spot with Buchanan opening up.
Yeah. So they could do that. And they his one issue right now is that not only does Peebles not really fit. I don't think Peebles fits largely because of the inside linebackers they have. They can kick outside. Mm-hmm. They can kick inside. So they certainly want to have Travis Jones on the field for every pass rush snap, and he's been great recently. And then they want to have a three tech who can help them. Now, the three tech, they apparently don't feel like Peebles is the guy. I respect that. They've seen him play. I haven't really. But they have gotten value from the inside out of both Ardarius this last week, for example, and Draymond. And they could do that. They could even play some race car if they wanted to with both those guys. If they wanted to give that a shot. So it'd be interesting. They've got an interesting thing, but honestly, the net effect of it is that Peebles is taking, is an inert spot on the 53. They can't cut him. I guess they could IR him if they had a legitimate reason. But they're not going to use
Cooper Rush. If they really, really need a spot on the 53, Cooper Rush. Let Peebles continue practicing. You know, there's some value there. There's some value in that. Okay. You know, he's fifth round pick, right? I know he got a lot of people were excited about him. They were looking for something to be excited about, sixth round pick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are you expecting in the first year? You'd like to see a little bit more action so he can develop a little faster, but they're in a playoff chase. So what are you going to do?
No, I'm believe me, I'm okay, and I don't want to lose Peebles. And I think what you're suggesting is let's just carry six defensive linemen and two quarterbacks, and that is a reasonable solution to it. The Ravens are usually so tight on roster spots, they don't have this chance. And the other thing is injuries could help you make the decision too. So if somebody else goes down, that may open up another spot that they feel they can use for that.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Should we get into the mailbag? I think we've hit on the inactives a fair amount already, right?
Yeah, I think as far as special teams elevations, I don't see it. Unless they want another guy with a big body shape and size, then maybe you're looking at one of the outside backers, I think, that maybe could help you, whether it be Malik Ham, right? I think he did play some special teams when he has been elevated before.
yeah, he could do it if needed. They didn't have any elevations last week, and part of the thing was they got two legitimate starters back. Right. that are good players, so they had a lot of extra depth. Let's get into the mailbag if you're okay with that. We'll start off with Connor Kellistras, and he has one of the questions that I think is good for the next step is with Travis Jones and Mark Andrews extended, please discuss other candidates for extension besides Tyler Linderbaum. Thoughts on Jordan Stout, Draymond Jones, Shedeur Awuzie, Ardarius Washington, and Alohi Gilman. That's five of them. We did have another question from Sworn in Miles. What do you do with Alohi Gilman this offseason? I've got some more specifics on that one, but let's talk about these five guys relative in terms of their who do you like as a UFA?
Draymond Jones is at the top of my list for sure. The Ravens are going to have a lot of needs going into the draft and going into free agency. If they can check that box with a outside linebacker on a multi-year deal, I think they should pull that trigger.
What's your number?
My number would be 13. Yep. 13. Yep.
Three for 13 AAV, right?
Correct. And that put him about 30th among all edges. He's 28 years old, so you still got a couple good years out of him, I think.
Yeah, I think that's too high for me. I think I'd rather go to the draft if that were the number. I'm at maybe three for 10 and a half and 11, and I'm only Delphi-ing because my initial thing that I wrote down on this page was three at nine.
Yeah, and okay. Well, to me, I think you need not only Draymond or a similar veteran, but also a draft pick. I mean, the Ravens are fourth worst in sacks this year. So, you know, you have Mike Green, Tavius, Draymond, and a relatively early pick that's replacing Van Noy, and then maybe that's your fabulous four.
Right. You could do that, and you could certainly go the vet route again, and they could go vet cheap again, where they've had a lot of success in the past. And I think – since the Ravens have a skill at that, and outside linebacker is such an expensive position to fill, I really, really want them to flex that muscle whenever they can, because it's very valuable to have a cheap guy there.
I've been on that boat since we started the show, and the same thing with moneyballing offensive guard, but I'm starting to think maybe that, you know, came to bite them this year. Their pass rush has not been good enough, and the blocking has not been good enough, so might be a way to reconsider. It's hard though when you pay some of the other positions, you have to go cheap somewhere.
Yeah, you do have to go cheap, and also one does not necessarily preclude the other in terms of either the draft pick, as we saw them go high for Mike Green, or in terms of even paying somebody if you wanted to. So you could pay Draymond exactly what you're saying. I'd still want them to dive in the veteran pool for their fourth or fifth guy, okay, whoever it is, to get that other guy.
And then you save the draft pick and use it somewhere else. That makes sense to me. I like that idea.
All right, so let's the five guys. Jordan Stout, I'm a re-sign on him. I don't think we need to get down the exact dollars because I don't think I'm good at handicapping punter salaries. $3 million?
$3 million. $3 million a year. 3-year deal. $3 million.
Okay, I'm on. And why don't we make it 4 years while we're at it?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Jordan the pen.
Jordan, $12 million. We've got it right there for you. Chidobia Awuzie, I played very cheap this year. And the Ravens, boy, do they know how to hunt that scrap heap for players. This is just one of the great DaCosta moves, was getting Awuzie at the price he did.
Yeah, I would like to re-sign Chidobe. He's been the best corner, graded corner this year. 1 year, $5 million, $6 million. It's pretty much in line with Ronald Darby got when he left Baltimore. Similar age. He does have the age and the injury history. Can't go too much more than that. But in that ballpark, I think he'd be a value.
Yeah, I think that'd be okay. I wouldn't have a problem with it. And if they said what we did with him this year, for whatever reason, we don't think is replicatable any more than it was for Darby, I wouldn't have a problem if they said that either and try to find the next undervalued guy. I mean, I think they've earned a little bit of trust in our judgment. Of course, they lost some with the signing of 23.
Rock Yacine.
Well, him too. But the other 23 this year was the Green Bay guy.
Jair Alexander. Yeah. Yeah. They're not flawless. There was a safety too that they signed that wasn't any good anymore. But you got to invest in corner one way or another if Marlon's going to move to safety, which I do think is probably going to be the smart move this offseason.
Okay. I do. I think that is the smart move. And let's Ardarius Washington, first of all, 1 year, not vet men, but some sort of prove it contract.
$3 million. That's what he made this year. Give him another year.
Okay.
I like the homegrown guys. I always like the homegrown guys.
Yeah. It's good. Also, it doesn't negatively impact you in cap formula. And it's another guy. If somebody else wants it more, I mean, I don't want to be draconian or thoughtless about it or whatever. But if somebody else wants it more, then good luck to him. I mean, you know, he's probably earned it, and the Ravens might not be in a position to pay it. I want to get into sworn in Miles' question about Aloy Gilman directly, yes, because we want to talk about that. And let me get out to Reddit and where I have this. Okay. So the question itself is, what do you do with Aloy Gilman this offseason? And I'll tell you what my thoughts are. And Boss, I want to hear from you. But I think there are four options at least for what the Ravens could do at safety. I really don't want them going in shorthanded at safety, which means they probably need a third and probably a fourth safety that they have at least some hope can play well on the back end. And I'm talking about aside from Hamilton.
Yes.
So the choices for next year, one is Gilman, and I don't know what he's going to cost, but it's not going to be super cheap. Maybe $5 million is what he would end up costing. Ardarius Washington, if he's back from the injury, he meets the needs. And if they can get him at $3 million, I think that'd be a great deal because he really can play either position, right? I think, well. Number three, Marlon Humphrey returning as a safety. Now, they're already going to pay him $7 million. Are you okay with that, or do you need to get a further concession, or do you need to get an extension that's at a much lower number?
I'd like to see Marlon play it out and pay him the $7 million they could save. I think Marlon, you know, he hasn't had his best year, but he's made a lot of big plays, fumbles, interceptions. I agree. I don't think he has the quick twitch, you know, that quick twitch fiber. He still has a long speed. I think he still has a long speed. He was step for step with DK. He chased down that guy in, what was that, week 4 or 5? He chased him down, and someone said, Marlon Humphrey's the fastest man in the world. I mean, he's a track star. He still has a long speed, but the quick twitch he doesn't have. I think he could be a very good safety. And for that reason, among others, I think you want to try to maximize a comp pick for Aloy Gilman and let him walk. I know he won the player of the week. He had some good plays in coverage. He had a couple good tackles. He also missed a tackle or two. That's been an issue this year. And I don't think he has above average range as a safety, as far as coverage. Right. So for that reason, you know, thanks for joining us, and we try to get the comp pick.
Yeah. I'm not sure he'll generate a comp pick for us, but if he did, it'd probably be a 7. In the case of Humphrey, I really think there's a lot of portable skills that he brings to the position. So I think we've seen him make interceptions off man. That's been something he's done. I think he'd be good at that. I think, you know, safeties, you want your safeties to be good second man to the ball guys to try and punch the ball free. He certainly has that. I think he can be a good enough tackler, but right now among cornerbacks, he's 80th out of 80 in coverage grade on PFF. Ooh. Now that's bad. You know, he's had a 41 or 41.4 or something year in terms of his coverage grades. So that's a tough place to be. And it's 80 out of 80 who played at least half the snaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's Chuck Clark without the sound tackling. So to me, it's not worth it. I think they can do better there.
We have one more possibility is that they just go to the draft and they take it, or they go to another cheaper UFA. How would you rank the order of things? If you're going to re-sign Gilman fairly cheap, you're going to give the job to Ardarius and let him basically retake it from 24 when he did it very well, give it to Humphrey and have Ardarius be basically what he is this year, you know, since the return, in terms of being a slot corner slash need guy when something goes wrong, or draft or free agency.
I'd say Humphrey number one. I think you put Humphrey back there with Starks, with Hamilton too. You have tremendous interchangeability, ball takeaway potential. They can, you know, I think that would be, you know, they build it back to front. I think it would be tremendous. You know, they get the benefit of that there. And Ardarius, I'd like to keep he could be like the Patrick McCary of the defensive backfield, where he can do a little, you can fill your hole when you have it, plug the hole in the dam.
Yeah, it's kind of what Humphrey has become, honestly. But yeah, I'd be excited to see that happen, and I wouldn't even rule out the possibility that Humphrey is needed again at corner at some point during the season. Right. and then they have to bring it back down. And that's nice insurance to have as well. So appreciate the question.
Maximize versatility. That's the thing is he doesn't, Gilman doesn't have the versatility.
That's true. That's true. So as sworn in Miles from Reddit, appreciate it. Appreciate the Reddit community out there. Okay. I'm an effing ray of sunshine says that's what he's got. F star, 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 ING sunshine. Ray of sunshine. Yeah. Did you see that Cleveland released Dellinger? Could the Ravens make a waiver claim and IR Teddy as a corresponding prior to releasing Ben Cleveland after his suspension? And then since then, the Titans have claimed him. Do you make anything else of the Dellinger situation? I've got one observation from what happened that I think might have merit.
I would just say that he's been released now twice. Maybe he's just not good enough. I think maybe the Ravens have better options in Lakin Tomlinson and Kenyon Green on the practice squad.
I mean, that certainly could be true. And in particular, they could have better options for this season with either of those guys who maybe seem to be a little more ready. Dellinger was a guy, seemed to be a high demand guy. His agent said no to the Ravens. And we're looking around elsewhere. We're looking for a better opportunity. Then he goes to Cleveland. Okay. The word is that Cleveland wanted to re-sign him to the practice squad. And that they thought they could slip him through. It's the wrong time of year to try that game, by the way.
Right.
And obviously the Titans picked him up and now he is their guy. It's unfortunate. It's a loss. It would have been hard to keep him this entire season. The Ravens, if they had had him the whole year, might have cut him when Emory Jones came back. Mm-hmm. So that could have been one of the potential outcomes here, but I'm still kind of frustrated that they lost him this year.
Yeah. All right. I'll take the next one. Angela, we have two back-to-back with Angela, and they both kind of, the second one we already touched on. So, hi, Ken and Voss. Watching the New England versus Buffalo game, what changed in the second half, which allowed Buffalo to score and New England to have issues offensively, and how can we take advantage? Which personnel would you prioritize to activate this Sunday on both sides of the ball?
All right, so we talked a little bit about the defensive lineman. I'd go with four nose tackles, and that's part of his second question anyway, so that's covered. Okay, the second thing is, and this came up on the Know Your Foe episode, Mark Schofield was talking about the Patriots just can't stop the run at all right now, and that really hurt them. And the Bills in the second half, the play he was most upset about, the Bills had all kinds of big plays in this game, but the play he was most upset about was like an 11-yard run to start the second half. Which is interesting.
Trey White interception was what gave him the game. Trey White, our old friend.
So anyway, hopefully, the Ravens are able to run the ball very effectively against New England and make it a very long night for them.
I'll take the flip side of that one. I think Vrabel's going to load the box like he did in 2019, and he knows Derrick Henry probably better than anyone, so he knows he needs that runway. So I think you want to spread it out with 11. When you can, which Buffalo had good success with. Buffalo did everything in that second half. Yeah. They were running the ball. They were throwing the ball. It wasn't like one thing. They were doing quick game. They were doing short passes. Play action to tight ends. They definitely took advantage of that. So you want to, New England safeties are not up to par on the other side. They blitzed with five and got home several times to close them out. Without Will Campbell, like I mentioned earlier, Patriots O-line is
big
not
loss.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball, they don't have Milton Williams, who's a big loss. He's their Matabike. So I think, that's kind of the game plan. And I'd also look to shadow Stephon Diggs with Nate Wiggins. I think that's probably a pretty smart move this game.
Okay. All right. That's certainly possible. I think that the Ravens gave every other team in the league something to think about with how they played against Cincinnati. And specifically, it comes down to two plays. They did two plays that absolutely punished the two times that Cincinnati crowded the line of scrimmage. I'm not saying there weren't four, but it was a low number that they crowded the line of scrimmage. The first one was the 32-yard throw to Hopkins. It was just a sidearm throw, getting just enough outside the pocket to avoid the potential rushers and getting the ball off in a very easy pitch and catch throw. The second one, they baited him into it on the 30-yard touchdown pass to Rasheen Ali, a little swim move past the end on that side. It was Miles Murphy get over his shoulder, and all of a sudden, he's looking like he's going to block him. He's right by him, and sure enough, the ball comes out to him in plenty enough time, and he takes it 30 yards to the house. Those two plays give me as much hope as just about anything else, other than the fact that Lamar is moving better now.
Yeah. Just don't run into loaded boxes and try to pump your chest out and say, we're going to force it down your throat no matter what, and then pump, go three and out. That's what I really just don't want to see. If they're loading the box, use play action or quick game or something, get the ball into space. Don't try to out macho them that way.
I mean, you do have to play point of attack football occasionally in that situation, but basically whenever the opposing team comes to the line of scrimmage with a loaded box like that, my initial reaction is they have got to throw against this.
So yeah. It's
great stuff. All right, for boss, sure. Always a pleasure. Have we covered anything? Did we miss anything here?
Let's see. Do you want to go to Ryan's question?
Oh, did we miss Ryan's question?
We still have a couple more.
Oh, geez. No, we got to do this. Okay, yeah. Ryan, appreciate your comment here. Travis Jones is a critical re-signing for the future of that defense. My question is, what positions do you feel most pressing in this coming draft? In my opinion, between both lines, they need to draft 4 to 5 players.
To me, the number one priority is right guard emphatically. And number two would be a impact pass rusher, whether that's a defensive lineman or an edge rusher. So, as far as the number count, it depends who they re-sign. I mean, they have a lot of needs. They really do, especially if Marlon's moving to safety, and then you need corners, and you need a lot of people. But that, to me, it definitely should be a meat and potatoes, trenches type of draft.
All right. Well, they have a high-low possibility at lots of draft picks, but I know when you say right guard's the number one priority, I know you're still not saying they're going to draft a right guard in the first round, because that would be against the basic vast philosophy of not going for a position like that in round one.
No, I've pivoted on that. I think I think all five offensive line positions are premium if they're top-notch pass blockers. So I know you don't have the fifth-year option value, but you can sign them early, like they did with Kyle Hamilton. So if there is I really like this guy out of Miami, Francis Maliaga, who plays tackle but can kick inside the guard, and he could be Rosen. And Rosengarten's played well too. I think we should also make a quick note of that. He's improved his play as the season's progressed. But he could be the guy that plays right guard for 2 years, and you don't want to pay Rosengarten, so then he kicks out the tackle, something like that. I'd be okay with right guard in the first round. I would.
Right. Okay. They had some good options in the past. Michael Onwenu, by the way, is one of New England's best offensive linemen.
Your guy.
Yeah, he was my guy. I drafted 182 for New England. I don't know if the recording of that draft is still out there with how upset I was about that. But, they three guys, Ben Bredesen, of course, was the Michigan lineman that went to the Ravens, and then Patriots get Onwenu at 182, and Ruiz went 27 to the Saints or something. He was really early.
He's Ruiz, the Michigan center. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge reach. All right. We got a couple more that relate to the same thing we talked about a little bit earlier. Michael Shearer, my understanding is if we win Sunday night, the Steelers stumble in Detroit. Week 17 doesn't matter. Winner take all week 18. If so, would the Ravens and Steelers consider resting players like a bye? I think we covered it, but I'm emphatically on the side of you take every rest opportunity you can. And honestly, I don't see why this isn't completely analogous to a week 18 bye. They're just basically taking a bye, resting everybody before the playoff starts, which effectively is what 18 will be if things go the Ravens' way.
Co-sign that completely.
Okay. Harun Ahmed says, a comment, we don't need to look that far for a precedent in resting starters in the penultimate regular season game. In 2019, the Titans rested Derrick Henry in a meaningless Week 16 game. He then rushed for 200-plus yards in a win-or-go-home game against the Texans. So 2019, I think that was the first year of 17 games. No, that was 16 games. They had 14-2 for the Ravens. So I would need to look back to see that's correct, but I appreciate you pointing that out, Harun. And as always, appreciate the folks using hashtag Film Study Mailbag. Please do that. I'm trying to divide the questions into whatever show they belong on, offense, defense, Friday Morning GM, which is where a lot of them end up going, or a short 1 to 3 minute video like I've been putting out either on Reddit or on Twitter.
Yeah, quick comment, Harun. I did not know that. And not only did he go on to rush that 200+, then he propelled the Titans to the conference championship game that year. So you got a good 3-game stretch out of him after that week off. Maybe he might be a guy the Ravens should rest if the point spreads indicate who's going to win this weekend.
You give it all Mitchell and Ali then? Yeah.
For sure. Give it all to Ali. Rest Mitchell too.
Yeah. Ali, Brian McFarland was on when we were talking about the roster earlier this year, and Ali really hadn't had a carry yet, or he hadn't had many carries. And the question, he thought that maybe it's possible Ali would be the lead back. And after seeing him pass block, I think they'd rather probably have him in that role, but it wouldn't surprise me if he had 75% of the snaps if Henry was hurt, and he would be playing a lot of first downs and Mitchell would be limited. There's another comment that somebody made this year that Mitchell is one of three backs who's been timed at 20 miles per hour plus 6 times this year. And the other ones are like Jonathan Taylor, who has 282 carries, and somebody else.
Henderson from
it's Henderson.
It should be. I don't know. At least he looks fast as hell to me.
I think it might be him, actually. Now that you're kind of reminding me of what came back, but Keith Mitchell's had 39 carries, and 6 of them he's reached 20 miles an hour on. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. I can't believe that he came back from that knee injury like nothing ever happened, or whatever it was that tripped him up 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, incredible. Or 2 years ago. Voss, always a pleasure doing the show with you. Tell folks where they can find you online if they want to have a question they want to ask you directly, or where they can, or what your current venture is.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter, X, at Vasilis Fiamata, VasilisFiamata. Always like talking Ravens, even if we don't disagree. I like to debate the idea, not the person. I don't like the personal attacks sometimes, but I'm happy to talk ball with anybody. And again, want to wish everybody happy holidays, since we're probably not going to be doing the show on Christmas Day.
All right. Outstanding. I echo that. I don't say it enough in terms of how much we appreciate you and as an audience. You give us great questions to respond to every week. And honestly, I think there's some good ideas that come out of this in terms of what we can cover in the future as well and what's important to people. So appreciate your engagement. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next time on Friday Morning GM.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.